welcome to the Cinemondo podcast with Kathy, Mark, and Burke. We're talking about movies. Oh, and also Darwin. Let's add Darwin back in there. Horror, sci-fi, unusual, unknown, forgotten, underappreciated, and dog movies. Always interesting. All right. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, Kathy?
Hey, Burke.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Oh, and Darwin.
That's Darwin.
That's actually him barking right on cue, like
it is. He was
like
barking.
An actor dog.
He's definitely part of the cast, so he deserves.
Part of the show, he better talk.
Yeah,
people might think I added that sound effect in later, but nope.
No, he did that live.
Speaking of sound, I need to turn your mic up a bit, Kathy. How's
Make
that?
Make me louder.
How's that?
Is that louder, everybody?
There
can everybody
you go.
Out in the world hear me now?
Now you're now nice and loud.
Raise your hand if you can hear her better now.
Okay, everybody, don't wreck your cars when I'm louder.
Burke and Mark have really, you know, these kind of voices.
Bastard.
Yes.
I have to try really hard to compete with all that testosterone.
Oh, you sound good now. How you doing, Kathy?
I'm good. Yeah. Everything's good.
How have you been?
You know, I'm looking good. But, you know, driving here, there's this thing. Maybe other people have this problem. When I have an Apple phone. Mm-hmm. And when I get in my car...
An Apple phone?
Well, iPhone. Did I say Apple phone? I have an Apple and a phone.
I have a Granny Smith Apple phone. It's really sour and...
I have this newfangled gadget. I don't know what it is.
It's like a telephone, but it doesn't have any wires on it.
I got a beeper.
It doesn't look like a phone at all. So I have this iPhone. And it's connected to my car in a very high-tech way. So when I get in the car, it automatically starts music. So for some reason, it's the same fucking song every time I get in my car. I hear the first like few notes of the song, and it makes me angry.
What song is it?
It's I didn't want to say.
I know what mine is. I have the same
exact
problem. Well, I think it's mine because it's the first. I think it's alphabetical.
It is.
In iTunes. So mine is the A Very Cheery All By Myself by Eric Carmen.
That's a good one, though.
I know it starts with A, right?
It starts with A.
All By Myself. Yeah. Mine is A Christmas Song.
Oh.
by George Winston. And I just have it in some Christmas playlist, and it shows up at the top. So I hear this little piano.
You know what you should do? You should make an audio file.
But I don't know where it's coming from.
It's coming from your iTunes file.
Well, I keep looking at my playlist, and first I can't find that song on my playlist, and then when I try and like organize it so a better song's at the top, it never pulls from that. So I don't know where it's haunting.
Just record an audio file that says, "Hi, Catherine."
Oh, that would be really.
And then call it AAAA so that when you get in the car, your car will greet you.
Hi, Kathy.
Or better yet, it just doesn't come on.
That would be better.
I heard some. I know. I don't know how to turn it off. I've done all the like turning off the car autoplay and all that. It doesn't work. But I've heard actually good advice where you can get like audio of like birds and nature sounds, and you get in your car and you just hear babbling brooks and birds. I think that would be much better.
Or some Tokyo Subway tunes. You know how the Tokyo Subway every station has.
Oh, that wouldn't be annoying at all.
They're not annoying. I love those.
Anything's
or how about
annoying.
Just, you know, like. When I was young, oh boy, kill myself. I never needed anyone.
Now we have Mark singing on the podcast. Go, Mark. Sing
our ratings
it.
Through the roof.
Click, turn that
click. He's at least sing some raspberries.
Let me get my ukulele.
I know, it's funny you say that because I was just doing a Spotify of just random raspberry songs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great band. I'm sorry. That is great.
I have the complete box set. And
so
yeah, there's
good.
Some forgotten classics there.
We all saw their reunion show
we
at
saw
the House
them live.
Of Blues.
That's right. That's right. But now there's some live. It's called Pop Live or something. And it's a whole other recording of the Raspberries Live, which I don't really like live recordings. But
you know what's funny? Speaking of movies.
Were we?
The Segway Master. Burksall.
Hey.
And nostalgia.
U-turn.
The that raspberry show that we were at is actually available on film. It's actually a DVD that you can get of the raspberry show.
You should get that.
And
we're probably
in it. You can see us in there.
Can you see us?
You
have
can
you
see
seen
this.
It?
I know where we were, and you can see us in the audience.
Oh,
that's
really
awesome.
Cool.
I saw them at the same show, but in New York City.
Oh, yeah. So good.
We got to go backstage, too, and
we
meet Eric Carmen. We hung
a
out
really
with Eric Carmen.
Picture.
Yeah, he was really sweaty, and I put my arm around him, and my hand slipped off because he was wearing a sleeveless shirt. And I kind of, the picture, you can kind of tell I'm a little grossed out by touching him. But I love Eric Carmen. I wanted to
kind of like barely touch the shoulder, like, ugh.
I know. And I have a look on my face like, oh, he's really sweaty. But he was really nice to us.
He was very nice. He talked to us for a while.
He's a super, super talent to me.
Really incredible talent.
Brilliant songwriter.
I think he gets underrated because everyone thinks he's just that all by myself guy. And it's become such a cliche song, even though it's also a great song.
Yeah.
But we'll kind of forget some of the albums, which.
Well, there's, you know.
The solo stuff got it. Not. I love Eric Carmen. Never mind anything I was about to say. It's all
no, but
great.
It's more ballady. It's more like piano sort of ballads.
And you know what he has? I'm going to do a segue here, so we can go into our scheduled program.
You don't want me to sing? Another. what was sing, that one from Dirty Dancing? Whatever it was. Yeah.
The thing about Eric Carmen that is so great, I think, is that his music sort of recalls the past. He's always kind of had a. He's always sort of been in touch with that kind of that doo wop, you know, that sort of streets music, the pop music of the radio. He was always writing songs like about hit records and music, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. about being young and you know. Go All the Way as a classic teenager nostalgia song.
And I just heard off the album Starting Over. I just heard it yesterday. Was that, you know, I used to feel so fucking optimistic. Was the beginning opening line to that Starting Over song also about nostalgia.
And in the lyrics, because I had the album,
it's
instead of fucking, it says very.
That's what same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but it does, his music does really tap into that nostalgia. When you listen to it, you hear the past in his music. You hear the history of music in his music. And he romanticizes the past. And one of the things we're going to talk about today is that idea about films being romanticized reality. You know, the idea that when you watch a movie, I mean, even when you watch a movie like Die Hard or something, if you were to think about the reality of such an event, the guy wouldn't have been that much of a hero. He wouldn't have been, he probably would have lost. He probably would have been killed. You know what I mean?
Don't say that about Bruce Willis.
But our movies, the movies that we love, are purposefully unrealistic in a lot of ways.
Well, because what's so fun about reality, seriously?
That's exactly it. We want to escape. We want to escape from reality.
And we love looking back. When you look back, you sort of tend to think about the positive stuff. The negative stuff is there, but if you're going to make a movie, you know, you're going to try to look at it and say, okay, let's make this entertaining and interesting and more fun than, you know. Mm-hmm.
And so, if you were going to make a movie about your own youth, you know, you're not going to put all the, well, you might put some of the embarrassing, awkward things, but you would do it in a way that would be sort of cute and entertaining.
That's sort of adorable bullying that we all endured.
It's like
kids.
The time when the guys like unplugged two of my spark plugs in my car and it didn't start. And I was in the high school parking lot for 2 hours.
But if you were going to write a
memories,
that's a good one.
Memories.
Yeah. If you're going to write a movie about a bully, you're going to always probably want to have the bully turn out to, you know, come from a horrible home life. And at the end of the movie, you're best friends with the bully, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like now you understand him because he's just abused and angry and acting out because he feels helpless.
He just needed love.
Poor bullies.
But it's the idea of romanticizing, that nostalgia idea. And some of the movies that we were going to talk about today, we thought about some movies that were. Romanticized versions, they're fun to watch movies, but they're so unrealistic as far as what the actual reality of a situation like this would be. They've taken the idea of the past or a memory of the past or the idea of what somebody might remember of growing up, and they've turned it into a drama that's really fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But when you're watching it, you're very clear. It's very clear that this is not reality.
Well, because they can be very stylized, like not even like, hey, let's make a romantic version of my past. They're also very unrealistic in every conceivable way. Not even like a nostalgic way, but just like very stylized, like, you know.
But in a way that makes it into almost like a comic book version of what you wish it had been. You know, it's like when I was a kid and I was in the streets in New York, when I was growing up in New York City, it would have been so cool if there were gangs like this, like the ones in that movie The Warriors.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right? Wouldn't it be cool to be a member of a gang that wore those overalls and the skates? And
well, you know, it's funny.
Wouldn't you have just felt so cool skating around New York in your overalls and your feathered hair?
And your white outfits?
Well, it's funny. It's like, you know, I never saw the movie when it came out. I said, that's just too intense for me.
Too much.
Too much and too creepy.
Remember, I saw it about five times.
So I just saw it for the first time not too long ago. And I go, wow, this is what I was scared about, you know, like, yeah, I mean, the gangs are just funny.
They sold it so seriously, like, and there was this, like, really inner city gang thing, and you see it and you're like, I do not know any inner city like this.
There's the marketing, I think, from you know, the movie company was, I think there was, like, you know, there was, like, actual fights at movie theaters.
Yeah, that was what they said.
Yes.
Yeah,
so it was kind of scary in that way, but when you see it, you know, I mean, yeah, there's the gangs that at the end, there's the gang that is in the jean overalls and the roller skates and the feathered
the hillbilly gang.
Yeah,
and they're, like, so scary. And we were just laughing about how they have roller skates, but they're in a subway.
Yeah. How did they get down there? I want to know. Did they take their skates off?
We have to sort of just click clack down the stairs sideways.
Maybe they skated down the arm things.
Yeah.
And the easy way to escape is to run up, like, the stairs.
Skateboard. Right.
Exactly.
Or, like, it's Kathy, like, was saying, take a sharp turn.
It's like, here comes that gang. It's okay. We just have to go up a few stairs and take a turn.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're just running. Right. They're going to go right off the side. And
let's run across this dirt.
Yeah. There's some sand.
Yeah. There's some grass over there. Let's go run across the grass.
They just yell and throw their bats at us.
Right.
And it's kind of funny that they were the gang at the end. They were, like, the ultimate gang. They were, like, the last gang that the Warriors,
the
I
elite.
Think, didn't have to
oh,
fight.
Oh, the skaters?
Yeah, right? Because there were other... I mean, we should back up a little bit and talk about the story.
Well, oh, yeah, the story.
The story is a great story. It's an epic story.
From point A to point B, done. Okay.
And if you haven't seen this movie, it's fun to watch. It's not a great movie.
It's not scary.
It's not realistic. But it's got some great... fun comic book style characters in it. And I want to go back to that idea. I just said the word comic book. I want to go back to that because that's a sticky point with this movie. When it was re-edited, when the director did a director's cut, I feel like he kind of walked back his movie in a way and sort of added all these sort of comic book page turning graphics between scenes and all these things that made it like, oh, I meant for it to be a comic book. I meant for it to be unrealistic.
To be a joke. Get it?
But I have a feeling when he made the movie, he wasn't really very street savvy.
See, that's what made it so cute. It was
exactly,
so earnest.
Yeah.
That's funny
what
to
I love
say a movie
about
like
it.
That is cute, but it's cute.
It is kind of cute in a way, you know, old a friend of mine who saw it said it reminded him of the Electric Company. Remember that kids show?
Yeah,
it's like the gangs were like you expect the gangs to sort of show up and teach you how to read or something. Like they're going to hold up cards that are going to have the letters, and they're going to go, "This is the letter A."
Was that the Zuma Zuma Zuma?
Kind of like Zoom. Yeah, it's from that era. You know, the '70s when. But they seem kind of harmless, and they all seem to be dressed in, like you were saying, like costuming. Mm-hmm. Like they spent like the baseball furies that everybody always talks about, the gang that are dressed in baseball uniforms and they have their faces painted like people you see at sporting events.
Yeah,
they
have like
paint their colors.
Half black, half white.
And they're wearing, you know, the cap really low on their forehead, and they're, you know, walking around with baseball bats.
They look like dancers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which they probably were.
They were.
But as they leave their underground lair, there's this great shot of them all running up the stairs, and there's a rack of baseball bats, and they each sort of pick their bat, you know, like,
wait, did they run upstairs?
These are not in skates. These are the baseball guys.
They're in they're in cleats.
That's right.
Which probably not that easy. Right. Yeah.
And then they go out onto the street and they do that great shot of them walking down the street like tough guys with their baseball bats.
Yeah. All these gangs are going after the Warriors, which is the gang that was accused of shooting Cyrus, who is the ultimate leader of all the gangs of
New York.
He
was trying to unite the gangs.
Yes. And so this other gang pinned it on the Warriors. The Warriors didn't do it. And so the Warriors have to get back to Coney Island. That's their lair. So they have to go from, I think it's the Bronx.
It's their turf, man. Use the right term.
Turf, dude. At least sound like lair. You got some urban.
Well, the gangs in West Hartford weren't quite as intense. So anyway, that's the whole story. They have to get back to their turf.
Well, the beginning of the movie is kind of cool. Is this guy Cyrus has this idea, this great idea. He pulls all the gangs together and calls a truce, and he gives this speech, and it's that classic speech where he goes, "Can you dig it?"
That's right.
And everybody's watching, you know, and all the gangs are together and there's peace, you know. It's like the one peaceful moment. All the gangs are coming together and Cyrus is saying, "We own this city. This city is our turf." He counts the number of cops. He said, "There's only this number of cops and there's way more of us. We own this city." And then somebody shoots Cyrus and blames it on the warriors.
And there's pandemonium.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the cops come, and they're like, you know, like the Keystone Cops.
Right.
Like the worst. This gang's just so much more sophisticated.
So the warriors are from Coney Island, and this meeting was, like, up north, you know. So the idea of the movie is, guys, we have to get back to Coney Island with all the gangs in New York City on our tail.
Right.
And there are all these gangs chasing the warriors, and they have to get all the way from all these subway stops all the way back home.
All these subway stops. Yeah.
And there's just, you know, like there's a scene where, you know, they're on the subway, the warriors, and then there's a fire started. So the subway has to stop.
Right.
And everybody has to get off.
Convenient fire.
Yeah. Well, it was. That's, yeah. They lit it on purpose to stop the train.
Right. So then there's a scene where they're on this bridge, and then they see this, you know, school bus filled with all these gang members,
the skinheads,
coming down, and like
the Turnbull ACs.
Yeah.
And they're in the middle of the road on the bridge. And they go, "We gotta go!" And they start running, and the bus comes after them, probably going like 6 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And the warriors are running down the bus,
and they're running down the middle of the street. It's one of those shots that if you had a still of it, it would be cool. It's almost like they did that for still photographers, like the guy's running and there's a bus behind him. But in the film, that's one of the weirdest scenes because it's so weird.
They sort of go off to the side, and the bus just sort of drives off.
Drifts by. Yeah.
And it's got all the skinheads are hanging out the windows, shaking their fists and shaking their baseball bats and shouting.
Look at you, warriors.
Yeah. You better run.
Yeah. So.
It's a very fake movie in a way that it's actually really fun to watch it as a alternate reality drama.
Well, you know, I'm looking at this list online, and they talk about there's 21 gangs in this movie. So we have the Turnbull ACs, which were the first gang that are the warriors.
The skinheads.
Yeah, they were the baldies.
The baldies in the bus.
Then you have the orphans, and the orphans were kind of like, they weren't even invited to the party.
Right.
Like, they were like the minor leagues.
Low end.
Yeah.
Like they were like the nicest, like barely a gang, like kind of like the ones left over that no one else wanted them.
They were like little boys, actually.
They were.
You see kinda them up
nerdy
on the rooftops.
Yeah. But they had the girl who kind of came out.
Mercy.
Who kind of hangs
and she's out. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mercy. Calls them chicken.
Yeah.
Which is the worst insult.
Yeah.
You know, I have chickens and they're kind of fierce, actually. All right, and then there's the Baseball Furies, which everyone loves because they're so cool. Like zombie baseball. I don't even know what that is.
Well, their faces are painted like sports fans, you know, when you paint your face and your team's colors.
But they have like the black lips and the white face.
Right. So they
look really strange.
Yeah, kind of dead or something.
Yeah.
But and then there's other weird things in it, like
The Lizzies. They were the closest overpowering, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah,
the Lizzies,
because they were like had all the
girl
off guard. They're just girls. We don't have to worry about them. But they probably got the closest to actually taking them out.
Well, they had guns. They could, and they were in a small room. They could totally shoot them. But they just were the worst shots.
Well, this was back in the days too. That you have to remember. This was like in those days when a gang with a gun was considered really, really heavy.
Yeah.
Fight with knives and sticks and baseball bats. Nunchucks
were big. Yeah.
It's like that shot in Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
The nunchucks, you just shoot them.
Yeah.
But it was like this noble thing, you know, no guns. You always hear that in the gang movies. It's like, we meet up on the hill at 5 o'clock, no guns.
And then of course they always bring guns.
Well, the bad gangs, the really sleazy gangs.
Well, 'cause they're all bad.
And the gang that kills the Cyrus at the beginning, the guy, the actor who was later in Twin Peaks and who in this movie has probably the most memorable scene. What's his name?
Daniel Patrick Kelly.
That's right. He's does the thing everybody remembers from this movie where he puts the Coke bottles on his when he's trying to track down the warriors.
Yeah,
and he clinks the Coke bottles together and he says, "Warriors." And it's this really creepy voice. And it gets more and more intense until he's almost screaming it.
He gets more and more upset.
Yeah.
But you know, his gang was called the Rogues, which is probably one of the cooler names.
They were kind of a realistic, dirty looking
gang.
They
looked like what an actual gang would look like then.
Yeah.
They were like the baddest badasses,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
The baddest of asses.
Because they were much more badass than the punks, which were
right.
the overalls, which I'm not quite sure why punks were wearing overalls. Or roller skates. Like, why? Yeah. Punks.
I know.
Really, that was such a fail on that one, I think.
Well, yeah, it was but in a way it becomes one of your most favorite parts of the movie
they
because
are,
when they show up,
punks?
They're like they're so funny. They're so, funny when they show up, you know?
It's sort of like that, but that was, you know, that was a cool way to look back in the late 70s.
The overalls?
It was there was kind of that roller
it wasn't
skating
punk,
was
though.
But no it wasn't. But roller skating had a like a 6 month, a 1 year where it was hot, disco boogie. It was
right.
Very disco week. And this was like made in 78 or 79 as disco time.
Yeah.
You sound like you know a lot about disco.
I was 30. I was 37 when this movie came out. That's not
You're
true.
You're 100 years old right now.
I was about the perfect age for this movie when it came out, and I remember seeing it and thinking it was just so tough. But even, you know, the thing is, it's about New York City, and I think at the time I saw it, I'd never really been to much of a big city. And I grew up in a little town in Florida, and even a little small town kid watching this movie in 1979, I thought it was like, this is kind of phony. I don't know if I'm buying this.
I know. I
Those
was
guys
disappointed because I thought it was going to be really scary and hardcore, and it was not.
You weren't scared about the big climax at the on the beach?
No.
On the Coney Island beach?
You're talking to a girl who's watching like Hammer Films Last House on the Left, and this is like, you know.
Well, that's the thing. There's not a whole lot of violence.
Nope.
It's not a gory film. It's not like a... I mean, there's some fights and things like that, but it's all sort of artificial. It's consistently artificial, the way that this movie's handles the violence and the... And the action and the way the characters interact with each other is the way they talk to each other and their names. You know, we were going through the names of the characters like Ajax and Cochise and Swan, and those I guess those are their gang names. You know, but they're comic book characters.
Oh, very, yeah.
And unfortunately, the director decided to go back in recent years, maybe I don't know 5 years ago or whenever. And he did a recut of the film. He did a director's cut because it's a cult favorite, and he just had to go in and tweak it and have it or give it a re-release.
You think he ruined it by trying to make it more a comic book? Because I don't think I hear what you say about comic book characters, but it doesn't feel like a comic book to me when I watch it. It feels like kind of like a toothless feel of what a Gangs of New York would have been like in the late 70s, but in a very endearing way.
Yeah.
You know? Kind of harmless, we're just going to wear cool outfits way.
Yeah.
But I mean, comic book in terms of the characters wear costume, you know, it's very
archetypes.
Costumey, and they're archetypes, you know, there's like the you know, like the superheroes have a superpower, and each one of the gangs had their thing, you know, they had to be, these guys are on skates, these guys have baseball bats and dress like baseball players. These guys all have skinheads and chains, and these guys all have mirrored sunglasses at night for some reason, and et cetera. You know, they were all like superhero type characters in a weird way.
And you had the narrator who was this DJ, this African-American DJ on some radio station who kind of knew what was going on.
She's doing the covert communications. You know, they're sending her information, and she's kind of in a coded way playing certain songs like, you know, you better run. You got to run, but you can't hide kind of songs.
Is everybody scared yet? Does that sound like a scary movie to you all out there?
Very much. I kept thinking that when she was doing that. I kept thinking of, Adrian Barbeau in The Fog.
Yes.
You know, like... KB Antonio Bay.
Yeah.
A fog coming off Spivey Point.
Yeah.
Here's some music for you.
But she was kind of a evil character in
but
this.
But she was.
She was like really threatening to them, but in such a pleasant voice and playing these cool old pop songs.
And she's so pretty and nice.
Yeah. But you know, another movie with gangs like this one. Have we talked enough about The Warriors?
I think we've definitely talked enough about
it. I like the movie in summary.
Sucks.
Kathy doesn't like it.
I do not like this movie. I think it's stupid.
Kathy's not cool.
I get the appeal, but every time I watch it, I keep thinking I'm going to reappreciate it, but I just don't.
Well, for the first seeing for the first time just recently, I enjoyed it as the way I would look at it. You know, I don't have that first impression when I tried to watch it when I was younger, thinking it was going to be tough and cool, yeah. And it wasn't. It was just more kind of goofy and sort of fun. You know,
it wasn't when I saw it when it came out. It wasn't what I wanted it to be. You know,
right. Definitely not.
But as I grew older, I think when I saw it originally, I was probably disappointed. I was like, "This is kind of
because
fake.
Walter Hill can make tough movies."
Yeah,
The Driver came
That's
out. Like
another yeah. reason yeah. I was expecting more is right. the director, the concept.
Right. I just feel like it's one of those movies where he didn't understand his subject matter. Mm. It's like, you know, we were talking about that Kafka book called America that he wrote, that Kafka wrote, you know, mm-hmm. having never been to America, he wrote a book about somebody going to America and he got a lot of things wrong, but that's what makes it interesting to read it, because you're reading somebody's impression of what they imagine America is going to be like. And that's what I always think about Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, you know, the Russ Meyer thing that he did with Roger Ebert, the film critic.
Yeah, Ebert wrote it, yeah.
Ebert wrote this thing about the Hollywood music scene and the sort of celebrity underground parties and rock and roll of the 60s. And Roger Ebert had no idea what he was talking about. And you watch these movies about these parties and you're like, there was never a party like that, ever. Yeah. And nobody ever, you know, there was never the boy genius that looked at the party and said, this is my happening and it freaks me out. You know, the dialogue yeah. in that was just so trying really hard to get hip to the 60s
yeah.
banter, you know.
And then when you read like the copy line, first of all, the poster's super dark and scary looking.
For Warriors?
Yeah, it's like yeah. graffiti and like.
The copy line is, these are the armies of the night. They are 60,000 strong. They outnumber the cops 3-1. They can run New York City. Tonight they're out to get the Warriors. That sounds bad. Badass as shit, and it's so
but then
awesome.
You go to you know, jean overalls and roller skates.
There's also
pumps.
A lot of
oh, let me get this thing out of my overalls pocket.
There's also a lot of downtime for the gang too. The Warriors
get to hang out with some girls.
Yeah, they get to have a little bit of freedom to kind of run a little bit. You know, it's a calculated drama.
I know, but couldn't they have just like if they're a real gang, they could have you know just hotwired a car and driven home. And the thing yeah. would have been over in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's just.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's like all the gangs were very segmented and they'd meet them along the way. I mean, it all felt like it felt very stylized, like it was something else than what they sort of were selling it as.
Right.
Well, yeah.
They were market it as a movie, as a certain movie.
Marketers suck.
But well, that movie was very successful. It was a huge hit. Whereas this other movie, The Wanderers.
Yes.
Got released to two theaters and
very
like
ahead of its
10
time.
Drive-ins. That was
and
it.
This is a movie that I never saw until recently. You brought this up as a good one to watch.
I didn't even know it existed till you guys brought it up.
It's a cult. It's one of those movies that was kind of forgotten. It was directed and written by Philip Kaufman, who
right.
did really good movies. The Right Stuff, the remake of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers,
wow.
The Story for Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, you know, big The Unbearable Lightness of Being. These are all his movies.
Wow.
So
he's good. This is actually a good movie compared to The Warriors.
This came out before Warriors? This came out in 79.
79. I think it came out the same year.
Wow.
But it got completely dropped by
the distributor.
That's
like one of those, you know how like when you hear about a script or a concept and then all of a sudden there's like four movies coming out the same thing?
Yeah.
Like the same like studio executives saw the same script and came up with their own idea. That's sort of what this felt like. Like the Wanderers shopped their script and they go, hey, let's do a cooler one with cooler outfits. Okay.
And it's almost a reaction to American Graffiti too. That was a,
mm-hmm.
but that happened years before, but it was such a popular movie. I think people were still doing the nostalgia thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought the Wanderers, honestly, I never saw it because I thought it was a musical.
It does look like it'd be like West Side Story.
Well, it has that feel. You see these kind of guys and, you know, these kind of like, you know, 60s, early 60s, you know, outfits or, you know, jackets and stuff. And it's very West Side Story-ish. And even the logo looks, the Wanderers, the Warriors, there's such a, you know, there's a lot of comparison there if you just look at it. But it's a completely different movie.
Yeah, very different movie.
Experience.
Yeah. But it's also it has a little bit of that kind of alternate reality, nostalgia, romanticized look at the past.
Doubt.
But there was a lot of movies around that time. Remember Streets of Fire? That was a hyper-romanticized movie.
And I think that might have been a Walter Hill film.
I think so. Yeah.
I remember that for sure. But this was like, you know, this takes place in the early 60s. It's the Bronx, and the gangs back then were more segmented into, you know, your heritage. So the Wanderers were an Italian-American gang. Then there were other gangs that were, you know, there's the African-American gang. There was the Asian gang. And but there was also a gang called the Baldies, and they were just, you know, they just cut off their head, cut off their hair. They cut off their heads.
It's a horror film.
The gang didn't last very long.
It was a weird initiation that just didn't work.
You want to join our gang? You got to cut off your head.
See, I would love that.
Yeah.
Like that. It was also Ken Wall's first movie. Remember that actor?
I liked Ken Wall a lot, and he was in that great Stephen J. Canal show, Wise Guy.
Right.
Which I loved. I had Jonathan Banks, good. Who was,
and he got out of acting because he had a car accident or something.
Some kind of injury.
Disfigurement. And now he's like a real big time animal activist. Like he won an Emmy for Wise
Motorcycle
Guy.
Motorcycle crash broke his neck.
Oh, motorcycle.
Oh, wow.
Hey.
He turned into this kind of like, you know, recluse slash, but animal activist, and he won an Emmy for Wise Guy. I know this. And then he put it up as a reward to, for some information to find out how this one guy, did something to an animal, and he was really upset about it. So he said, listen, if you find out some information and get this guy, you know, arrested, I will, you know, I'll give my Emmy to that person.
Oh, wow. I love that.
That's so cool. He's a super animal activist.
That's really cool.
Yeah. But anyway, he's really good in this, as the lead, as are all the actors. You know, I think John Friedrich, who plays Joey, is very much like a John Cazale type. You know, he's sort of like the sad little kid who gets beat up all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know.
He was so pitiful. And then he shaves his head and he looks even worse bald.
Oh, no, that's
a different
that's
one.
The other guy. That's
oh,
the guy.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm thinking of, what was his name? He had like a funny name. Now.
Yeah, he's the guy that wanted to be in the Baldies.
Jeremy?
Right.
Yeah. Oh. So,
but the kid who you're talking about is, the actor's name is Mark.
John Friedrich.
Yeah, he's still around. He's still on television.
Is he? I haven't seen him in forever.
Yeah, I think he's done a lot of TV stuff.
Oh, okay, but he's good in this.
Yeah.
You know, he's really good in this, as are, like I said, all of them. And
I think he plays attorneys now, that kind of.
Oh, okay.
You know, like L.A. law for a while, or I think. I don't know.
And Karen Allen is in it.
Karen Allen's great and everything. She's really good.
I know. I like how she was kind of the badass, because they had that little trick they would do where, what did they call it, where you had to go up and knock a woman in her boob with your elbow.
Right.
They called it elbow something, elbowing or whatever. And so they send this guy out to do it to one woman, and she, you know, kicks his ass and knocks him down.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Ken Wall who approaches Karen Allen. So he walks up to her, and then he's like, oh, I can't. She's like really cute, and she's going to talk to me. And she kind of gives him shit because he tries to pull a move. And then, of course, they fall in love, sort of.
Sort of.
Yeah. Sort of.
She
was smart enough to kind of get out of it.
She's from a different world, though.
She was too good for him.
She was a little smarter, a little more educated, and, you know, a little more worldly.
I think she was fascinated with the bad boys, you know?
Right, right. And sort of kind of goofing, like that whole sort of like strip poker scene. She kind of got it, you know?
That
right.
was funny.
Yeah. She kind of got what was going on there. And, but what was really interesting to me is when they meet up with this other gang, the Ducky Boys. And it's sort of like, it's a very straightforward sort of drama. But then when they venture off into the Ducky Boys territory, all of a sudden it gets dark and it gets very misty and foggy.
Right.
And it's like, what is this?
And they were the craziest. They were like the Irish gang, and they got really scary.
And they never spoke in the film.
They
right?
didn't speak, but they all
crazy looks on their faces.
Well, there'd be like a football game or something, and then, you know, you'd see them, and they're all sort of lined up, a la Assault on Precinct 13.
Right.
Then 2 seconds later, they're gone.
You know? They would disappear.
Like, this is just weird, and that really affected me in a good way. I liked that. It was just strange.
And they dressed kind of preppy too, right? They didn't wear like street looking clothes. Weren't they sort of wearing like Izod shirts and khakis and things or like the idea being that they could sort of blend in? I think that they just looked like normal people. They weren't wearing like gang colors or dressed up like gangsters or with shaved heads or anything. These are guys who could take 4 steps back and they could disappear into a crowd. And
they always had a mist machine nearby.
Yeah. The guy that ran the fog machine.
But the fog machine up Harold. Okay.
And then they had, you know, the, Perry, the guy that always shows up to save their asses all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that they made him like, I'm not quite sure what the significance of his character. I mean, he was like, he was almost like the mature one who was on the outside who would kind of come in and
like
go,
he'd seen things.
What are you guys doing?
He'd been through some stuff.
Yeah, and he had been through some stuff.
Yeah. And he ends up, you know, like befriending Joey, and they go off to, you know, go across the country.
They get away from it. They get away from that life.
Right off into the sunset.
Yes, and as they do, and there's some interesting, I feel, homoerotic undertones in the movie. Maybe I'm wrong there. But you know, there is the great scene at the end when they just leave the Lincoln Tunnel, and the first sign outside of the Lincoln Tunnel in New Jersey is San Francisco, 2,846 miles away. Like, like, what kind of a freaking sign is that? Like,
there's a few of those in movies, though, to show you where they're headed.
Yeah, but it's so obvious. There's no sign like that anywhere.
Yeah, that's why this one fits in that category I was talking about, that romanticized alternate reality.
Right.
Because in the world of films, when you look at a, you know, when you turn on, like on Gilligan's Island, you turn on the radio and what you want to hear is just about to, you turn it on and it says, the hurricane is almost where you are. And then you turn it off.
In other financial news, Thurston Howell Industries. Are, I'm like, wow.
What?
My amalgamated.
Lovey. But in movies like this, when you look at a sign, you know, like a street sign, it's going to tell you how far away where you are going is.
Exactly, which is usually very far.
Yeah.
You're never going to make it.
It just doesn't look like any other sign I've ever seen in a highway. You know, it's just a prop.
Well, I like, too, they did the classic, like, gang thing where there's going to be a big fight, right, and all the gangs are going to show up. And so they have the big, we're going to meet over here in, like, this big empty lot.
No guns.
And, of course, everybody shows up, and it's a football game.
I know.
And there's dancing.
And dancing and lots of cool music. And I'm like, wait, this is not a gang fight that I'm used to seeing. And it was so funny because when they get there, you see these guys, these tough guys, that they actually can play football. You're like, wait, what?
I know.
I did like the whole thing about the old guys who had been in gangs themselves when they were old, but still were kind of gangsters.
Like and parents?
The
like,
parents.
Yeah, yeah.
The parents of the guy's girlfriend. The guy had a girlfriend. The guy. Let me clarify.
The guy.
The character in the film who is sort of the main...
Richie.
He's kind of like one of the main people that we follow. He has this girlfriend whose father used to be in the gangs, and her father is one of those classic dads of the girlfriend who you're just scared to death of.
He feels like a made man. He feels like he might be part of that group, you know, like his friends are all these tough guys, overweight, you know, bowling shirts, you know,
sitting around hanging around the bowling alley,
smoking cigars and stuff, you know.
And when you mess with that guy's daughter, you're in for life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't do it.
They have their moment. As does this Asian gang, the Wongs.
And yeah.
I remember this because friends of mine really loved that movie when I was younger, and that one of their lines was like, don't fuck with the Wongs. Right. What does that even mean?
Because I'm the Wongs, okay?
Like Wongs.
Don't
like,
fuck
okay.
with them. And they also disappeared, you know, and came up out of nowhere, so.
Yeah, but they would, disappeared, meaning that they would be standing there talking to you, and then you turn away for a second, and you turn back, and it's like...
Yeah,
and
gone.
Then the guy goes, where did they go? And they go, we're still here.
Yeah, we're still here. You just can't see us. Oh.
So
there they are.
And as you know, the movie's got an occult following. There's some film festival somewhere in the U.S. where they show The Wanderers every year, and a lot of people come and watch it, and they talk about it. So it does have a cult following.
It's a fun movie. It's like the, you know.
It was a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be. Because I was like, this is going to be like Warriors Light, and it's going to be a musical, and there'll be a lot of singing and dancing down the street. And then you watch it, you're like, oh, this isn't at all what I thought it was.
It's really good.
There's some interesting
relationships. I liked it better than Warriors, I think. I know that's not what Google
is. It's a better movie than Warriors.
I think it's better.
It's a much better movie than The Warriors. As far as how many characters and stories and plot lines and characterizations.
The Baldies go into the Marine recruiting center.
Yeah, they get drunk and accidentally get recruited.
And the little girlfriend, you know, who's just this teeny thing. She's like, what are you guys doing? You know, she's like the voice of reason.
You realize what you've just done? And they're fine with it. They end up being fine with that. You know, it's like, okay, we'll just go over and fight, whatever.
Yeah. So it's one that... you should seek out. I think it's available anywhere.
Yeah, if you like the Warriors, you might even like this better.
Well, I think this is a different. It's gangs and stuff, and it's idealized and romanticized and all that. But it's a very different movie. This one has some genuine emotions. Warriors is kind of emotionless in a weird way.
Well, you don't really know the characters. You don't really know much about them or care. But in the Wanderers, you do care. Cause you really get to know the inside stories of a lot of these characters and why they're in gangs or not in gangs. And you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, Warriors is a very strictly kind of archetype characters. There's this guy does this and he does it all through the movie, and this guy does this and he does that through the whole movie. You know, he's every character has their abilities and their thing that they do.
And but, Burke, when you said, like, you know, Walter Hill maybe didn't know his subject matter. Philip Kaufman wrote this with his wife, and they lived it.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know,
you could sense it. You know?
You can tell that he knew it, but you can also tell that he kind of. He romanticized it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He painted it with brighter colors and you know, they added fog machines and things like that.
And that's nostalgia. That was the film for him 15 years later.
A little touch of racism, a little touch of lightness. It's all good.
Yeah, it's always some. It's weird seeing those 70s movies when they, you know, they
so racist.
Certain words come out, like, wow, you know, that could not be. It's just like watching all the families. Man, that could never be said on TV today.
Yeah.
No, it was controversial then, but not like it would be now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, we were talking about the idea of nostalgia, and there was another movie. I don't know. Maybe we could do a whole episode on this movie.
We could, because it's that good.
It's which is one I, for some reason, missed. It's called
World's End.
The World's End. Edgar Wright.
Yeah. Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, those guys. It's the Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead gang.
Let me put Hot Fuzz first. Shaun of the Dead's way better.
Well, Shaun of the Dead, but
that's their best.
But wasn't that the trilogy? It was Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, and
it's called
World's End.
And I can't think of the name, but there is a snack cake, a little like a Hostess snack cake, but it's called something else. And and it's a British, I think, or it's a European cake that you can buy. And it's called the trilogy, whatever that is, like Cornello. It's the
because there was one
I think the Cornello trilogy. Yeah, and in each of three movies, that's what they call it, because the Cornello is, you see the rapper or somebody
eating
in
the
can. Yeah, that's the Cornello trilogy.
At the end of this movie, he's talking about he doesn't miss the junk food, and then you see the rapper of a Cornello hit the fence,
that's
and he's like, oh, and he grabs it.
But that's, this is
I think it's Cornello, right?
I think so, but I might be wrong on that, but The World's End's great.
It's basically about Simon Pegg, who can't quite let go of his youth, and he's like Mr. Party Dude, and he wears all the cool clothes. Like, he's kind of like the, you know, he wears black and he's still hip, and yet all his friends kind of moved on and they have families and jobs, and so he wants to sort of revisit their youth and do this pub crawl called World's End, where they go through this whole circle of bars and end at World's End.
Right, and they go to their hometown.
Right. He's trying to corral them all, just like, let's just try it. And so they're a little skeptical. They're like, I don't know if this is a good idea. I don't really like drinking that much anymore. You know?
Right. They've moved on, and Simon Pegg
wants to party.
Yeah. And he was cool back in high school.
He
and
was
now
a cool
he's just
guy.
Sort of like,
he wants to sort of capture what his overly romanticized idea of partying was, you know, because they never really, it's like he still wears his Sisters of Mercy t-shirt and his jacket and everything, just like he did when he was a teenager. And he really loves the idea of those days. And there's a scene where he actually sort of somehow confronts himself as a teenager later in the film. And he looks at himself and he's like, God, I was so cute. And it's Cornetto.
Oh, Cornetto. Gotcha. Not Cornello.
That's funny.
And apparently it's like a Nutty Buddy.
Oh, it's an ice cream. Okay.
It's an ice cream cone kind of thing. It looks like a Nutty Buddy kind of thing.
Cornello.
British people and their snacks.
Yeah. So now we know.
And Martin Freeman's in it, who I always like.
Yeah, he's great.
And then the movie just, you know, in typical Edgar Wright fashion, kind of goes off on these interesting, you know, crazy tangents, but it all fits perfectly well into the story.
It's fun. Yeah. It never lags. It's like totally entertaining. And also really funny.
And it kind of makes you want to drink a beer.
Yeah,
which is very
does.
Rare. I go, boy, I feel like I'm getting thirsty.
Makes me wish we had pubs in America.
Made me
want
to do
real.
Like a 12-stop pub crawl.
I like
just like I used to when I was a kid.
It was like, I guess they tried it like 20 years ago. They tried to do this.
They tried it, but they failed.
They didn't finish. So he really, he's hell bent on finishing.
I see.
It was an unfinished business kind of thing.
They're going to these pubs and they go in and they have these great scenarios where they walk in and they order a beer and they stand there and they go to the next one and they order the beers and all the pubs look exactly the same. Like, it's like they're so homogenized and touristy now.
Right.
It was like, so they walk in and there's always like, you know, a family in there with their kids. It's right. Like not the epic pub crawl.
It's like going into an Applebee's. Yeah, kind of, so you good. Know.
And he busts in the door and he goes to the We're bartender here. And he's like, "Hey, it's me." And the bartender's like, "Yeah."
And "We're going to do the pub crawl." And he's like, "Oh, okay." Whatever, dude.
And we all kind of know that feeling, like you expect something to be a certain way because you remember it, and then you go back. Like you can never go home again, you know.
Yeah.
Like thing. It's exactly what it is.
You go and back to the nightclubs you used to go to when you were 23, and it's like nobody in there is going to remember you now.
I've been back to my hometown forever, but a couple of years ago we drove through it, and I drove through real quick to see it, and it was just like, man, it's not my home anymore.
Yeah.
So not weird. Even close.
Can't
you know?
It. Yeah. You can't go back.
Yeah.
You go into those clubs where you used to go see bands and you look around and you feel like you're like, hey, I used to be somebody here. You know, this used to be my place.
And you know that when you were, you know, a young kid, you would see those old people go, oh, yeah, a sad person.
Get out.
But then there's a little twist to this movie. There's that great undercurrent of getting older and, you know, looking to the future versus looking to the past. And then there's a little twist.
Oh, there happens to be like a whole thing about there's an alien invasion.
Oh, yeah,
that part.
Yeah.
And they sort of, you know, you crack their skulls and they sort of break like, you know, ceramic.
It was so good. That person was
blue
so
blood.
Yeah.
But they're like androids and their heads pop off and their arms pop off like toys. And it's pretty funny, but they're apparently trying to, it's Pierce Brosnan is trying to take over the world.
Of course he is.
And It's one of those kind of Invasion of the Body Snatchers things where it's like, it's all better. It's better this way.
Well, the thing is, it was so good. The reason a movie like this works, I think, is because you give a shit about the characters, which you didn't,
absolutely,
like in Warriors, right, or a lot of horror movies. You don't care. They're just cardboard cutouts.
Leave Warriors alone.
Leave them. Stop talking shit
anytime
about Warriors.
Anytime Kathy can, you know, to twist that knife in the Warriors.
Yeah.
So unlike that sucky film, The Warriors.
It's
so
not fair.
So I like that they built a lot of time just making the characters and their quest interesting.
Yeah.
So it would have worked without the horror and sci-fi element even. It was just that good. Like the characters, you cared about them. They were all very vivid. You know, what they were doing mattered, you know. So I like when they throw in the sci-fi thing, there's more at stake because you give a shit if they get away.
Exactly.
And they also add like the girl they used to have a crush on comes in. Can he get her back? You know, there's a lot of great moments that work on their own.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the movie works, unlike The Warriors, which sucked.
And it addresses that.
Stop!
It addresses,
I know what the title of this episode is going to be. Warriors Sucks by Kathy.
Sucky Warriors.
Or No It Doesn't by Burke.
Stop it!
But you know that the other thing this movie addresses really well is that friend that you have or had.
Yes.
Who,
still have.
That still maybe have.
Not you guys.
Not me,
you guys.
Not me. I would never.
Not you, Burke. Not you, Mark.
But
we're all very grown up.
Who can't stop living in the past. And not only that, they can't stop living in the past, but they have spent their whole life kind of abusing your friendship. And everybody, I mean, when he's trying to prove who's real and who's not, he tells each person, he's like, remember that time you had to take me home when I was drunk and you fell off your bike and you cut your leg? Show me that scar to prove that you're human. And the next guy, he's like, remember that time I accidentally crashed into you? And it's all the scars his friends have. His friends all carry scars from literal scars from being his friend.
Yeah.
Bert, do you want to talk about it, Bert? Let's talk about the scars.
The scars. Who hurt you? But you know what I mean, that friend. You know what I'm talking about, that friend
that
who still lives in the
friend.
Past and is a vampire friend.
Mm-hmm.
And Simon Pegg is the guy in this, and he really is. But sometimes those people can be really convincing.
You know, I wonder how many of our friends are listening to this going, are they talking about me?
Yes, we are.
We are talking about you. You're so vain.
Yes.
They probably think this podcast is about you.
Move closer to the speaker. Yes.
Samuel,
we are speaking.
I'm talking about you, Sammy.
And we're not talking about the Sucky Warriors. We're talking about you.
But no, it's that idea is in the film that's really funny. And I think the whole alien invasion thing is, I think part of it is when they go back to their town and they're older guys now, and they're kind of strutting down the old streets they used to strut down as teenagers. And they look over and there's a group of teenagers walking past them. And they kind of look at them and they go, wow, that was kind of us back then. But they look at these kids and they're dressed. They're not dressed in the punk rock style that they used to dress in. They look sort of preppy and different, and they all have their earbuds in, and they all have their phones and their lives, their version of teenager life. And I think the whole idea of when you try to recapture your youth, and or when you try to look at what, you know, you're an older person trying to recapture your youth, it's so alien, and it feels like the world has been invaded by androids.
Well, that's what I felt like, you know, going back to my hometown. It's like, this is not my place.
Yeah.
So the people that are walking down the street are people I don't know. I have no.
It's been taken over.
It's been taken over
by millennials.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm sure that's what he thought. He said, "Well, you know, okay, it's, you can't go home again, but let's you know, take it up a notch.
Yeah.
You can't go home again because the people that live there are not humans.
Right.
You know,
yeah, they're literally aliens now.
I love the name. And the movie has so many great moments. It's so rich with things like, I love the names of the bars.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
Like, there's
great.
Like the trusty cock,
right?
the old familiar, the trusty servant. You know, it's like all like the famous cock is actually what's called the famous cock. I'll just say cock one more time.
The trusty cock.
Did they have a gang in the Warriors called the Trusty Cocks?
They should have.
Their uniforms are hysterical.
They all carry dildos.
As far as we know.
You up in the dildo.
Walter Hill edited that out, and that's for his own private viewing. Anyway, but it's a winner. I mean, I like pretty much everything Edgar Wright does.
Yeah,
I think his movies are always chock full of stuff, you know.
But you know what's funny about this movie is I really like Shaun of the Dead and all the other ones, but I'd never even seen this one. I remember seeing billboards for it, and it seemed like they were pushing it as a straight sci-fi movie.
Yeah, they didn't sell it as the funny movie that it is.
Really? I can't remember. Because I, for some reason, got it mixed up with another movie that was like with Seth Rogen, which was a kind of their version. That was like a bunch of guys at a house, and then there was an invasion.
World's End? No.
It's
The
World...
End. Was it The End?
The End, but they were very much the same title.
It was.
So This Is the End, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Oh.
We should know this. We're doing a movie podcast. God,
well, we're not talking about Seth Rogen today. But anyway, so
once in a while, we sort of prove that we don't know very much about movies after all.
Once in a while, we're frauds.
That's our endearing
disclaimer.
Quality.
Disclaimer.
But that was a commercial film. We don't know a lot about those.
I think it was called This Is the End.
It had James Franco in it, so I automatically black out when I think about it.
Oh, so I got that mixed up with The World's End. Those two movies kind of came out at the same time, and so I got it kind of mixed up. So I never saw it either. I saw it when it came out. You
saw it. Don't lie.
I saw it expecting it to be a straight sci-fi film. Like, I thought it was
This Is the End.
Yeah, no, I saw both, but I didn't see The World's End thinking it was the Seth Rogen movie. That's
and The World's End had that poster. It's like a flaming bar sign, which was cool, but it made it look like just kind of a disaster movie kind of.
I remember seeing trailers where it showed the people, the android people with their glowing eyes and their glowing mouths and thinking, wow, this is like...
It's not that.
Weird sci-fi
movie. It's a
movie.
Little bit of that. I'd say it's 20% that, 80% cool movie.
Yeah, funny. It's a comedy.
Funny coming of age.
It's a funny movie.
It's especially for people wanting to, you know, have old friends or, you know, reconnect and have, you know, have those reunions and how weird those can possibly be. You
so
know?
This is a movie for old people.
Meaning that you're over 27. You know.
Yeah.
The Warriors is also for old people because it's sucky.
Stop it.
You have to be over 70 to like the Warriors. Oh, by the way.
This is what I think a lot of... Okay, I'm not going to say it.
Thanks.
Burke is going to kick you out shortly.
I'm going to come after you with my baseball bat.
He's putting on his makeup. Watch
on my overalls.
The roller skates are coming out. I'm going to go
upstairs. Hold on. I'm going to put on my roller skates. Hold on. Stop.
I'm going to get away. I'm going to run down these stairs.
Oh, gosh. Well, what'd you think of that for nostalgia?
That was pretty good. I think it was a nice little walk down memory lane.
Yeah, down sort of artificial memory lane.
Yeah, fake memory lane.
But, you know, there's other movies we can talk about in a later episode that do nostalgia, and they get it kind of... They get it a little bit more realistically. And, you know, maybe we can talk about those movies that are meaningful to us because they accurately represent those years.
That's true. We should do that.
I also think just, you know, any movie can be nostalgic to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And actually, you know, so there's plenty of those.
And we should do that. Like the movie that sort of informs your childhood in some way or your coming of age or something.
Mm-hmm. We'll do that in a future
episode.
I know
episode. What Burks is going to be.
What?
The Warriors.
The Warriors.
Get the Coke bottles.
We should have had some of you go, clean, clean.
Oh, if only we had Coke bottles. I don't even know if those things exist anymore.
You know, just to sign off a little bit, that actor who did The Warriors. Oh, yeah, Darwin's here, which means it's time to end this episode. That guy was great in Twin Peaks, The Return.
Yes.
Oh. I loved it because he also always plays these weird characters.
What's his name again, Mark?
Daniel Patrick Kelly. And he's good in everything. Like, he always plays kind of that character, but he's always good. He's always like...
He was the one talking to his foot.
Yeah.
In return, like, this is not my foot. Yeah. Like, he always has some good quote in everything he does.
I think it's that I am not your foot.
I am not your foot. They talk like this. I am not your foot.
He's one of those actors that if he's in the movie or the show, I'm going to like something about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Basically him. So,
there you go.
Yeah. I guess that's our look at nostalgia.
That sounds kind of depressed. I'm sorry, Burke. I don't really hate the Warriors, but I do.
It's okay to hate the Warriors.
He's going to hate a movie of yours soon, so get ready for that.
Oh, yeah. I'm expecting that.
But thanks for listening, guys. And definitely check us out, you know, on all the social networking places, please.
Social media.
Just Cinemondo Podcast. Google it.
And Cinemondo Pod.
On Twitter, which I still can't get, but that's fine. No. But thanks very much
for listening. See you next time.
Bye.
Take care. Cinemondo signing out.